what I did was I started doing intuitive eating. Like, what does my body want to eat right now? And where is that coming from? Is that coming from an emotional need? Like, I want sugar because I'm feeling lonely and sad, or I want crunchy, salty food because I want control. By the way, there's an interesting correlation between certain emotions and certain flavors. But I had to go, oh, wait, what does my body want right now? And just reestablishing that connection and relationship with my body as like a companion, like instead of something, an adversary or something that I just was disconnected from.
Hey, sweet lovelies, welcome to another episode of the Hormone Lifestyle Zone. I'm your host, Meg Ricci. I'm on a mission. I want to help women just like you demystify your hormonal issues and struggles and the many things that dance in between. And I call them the little dust balls of life. There's always something rolling across the floor that sooner or later we're going to have to deal with. My intention is to provide you with some wonderful tools, the right information, to keep you trucking on your journey. I want to inspire you to create new habits, new rituals that make you feel good, something to look forward to, new dietary choices, something that you can lean into that's going to balance your hormones, that's going to give you a better mood, that's going to make you feel good about you being you. Choices that enhance the quality of your life, allowing you to be the best version of you, who you were always intended to be. And basically, my mantra this year, just do you. If you get on social media, you're going to hear a lot of stuff. You're going to hear a lot of influencers. You're going to hear a lot of people that's saying they're experts in what they do. Just remember, listen to your inner voice and just do you. So if you are new to this podcast, I'm so delighted to have you here today. And if you haven't already subscribed, please do. And if you are one of my lovely regular peeps, thanks so much for joining me today. And I always appreciate good reviews. These reviews bring other women to the Hormone Lifestyle Zone. Everybody deserves good information. And this is why I do the Hormone Lifestyle Zone. I want to provide you with info that allows you to be the goddess that you've always been meant to be. I am excited about today's conversation. I have a wonderful guest that you are going to love. Her name is Nina Schein. And Nina is an incredible empowerment coach. And you're going to fall in love with this woman. I asked Nina to come on the show because she works with so many women struggling with emotional eating and binge eating. Women struggling with their weight, they're on yo-yo diets, not feeling good enough about their bodies. And I love her approach in helping women to create a new relationship with food by creating a new inner dialogue, a new relationship with themselves. You see, Nina gets it. And let me share a little of her backstory. At the age of 46, she was 206 pounds. Serious health complications, and she decided after 36 years of yo-yo dieting to turn her life around. She's a recovered emotional binge and compulsive eater. For many years and for many reasons, food was her drug. And in Nina's words, my body was my enemy, and dieting and working out were the grueling ways I would punish myself for never having a body that was good enough, while also turning to food for everything from boredom to crisis. So on that note, Nina, welcome to the Hormone Lifestyle Zone, my love.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be here. And the work that you do is so important and so incredible. So I'm just honored to be in your presence, my friend.
I mean, I find that to be such a powerful statement when you said, I would punish myself for never having a body that was good enough, while also turning to food for everything from boredom to crisis.
Yeah, hearing that again just made me go, oh, poor me. I'm so glad I don't feel like that anymore. It was a lot of just the shame and the struggle of having food have power over me. and having this body image that the diet culture, which I would like to smash with a hammer, has created for all of us, for every gender. It's just something that we need to really unplug from consciously and redefine our relationships with our body, reclaim that, get rid of old stories about, you know, that we've gotten from our, maybe from our mothers or from our parents, you know, or from our friends about what we're supposed to look like, and reclaiming what food is really for. It's such a beautiful relationship when we can heal it. We can really start looking at what our bodies do for us, to be loving toward our bodies, to exercise because we love our bodies, not because we hate it, to reestablish this healthy relationship with food that gets taken from us by diet culture and the whole society of what people are supposed to be eating and what's supposed to be looking like, which, you know, especially for women, that changes every, what, 5 years? Like, we're supposed to have a big butt, now we're supposed to have a small butt, and we're supposed to have big boobs, now we have to have small boobs. We look at Twiggy and Marilyn Monroe and all of these phases throughout history where women's bodies have been subject to fashion. And so we need to establish for ourselves in our strong center, who do I want to be? Where am I most comfortable in my body? And unplug from that diet culture machine.
Talk about your journey. Talk about the yo-yo dieting that you went through. I'll share with me. I mean, one of the reasons, you know this, and this is, you know, we met through my niece. You were on a set. And she told me about you. My niece is a stylist. And also, Nita is a makeup artist. She's worked on an incredible amount of films and that you've probably seen and TV series. But, you know, I want to hear your struggle. You decided at the age of 46 that you had to change your life. What happened? Did you hit the wall? What made you decide after all these years of yo-yo dieting that you had to change the conversation with yourself and find a way to heal?
Yeah. So I had gotten bigger than I had ever been without being pregnant. And I was like, okay, I've done this before. And you know what was interesting about it was when that happened was actually during 2020. It was during the pandemic. So we had some downtime and I had some time to reflect. And I realized that I had gotten so big and I had gone back and forth between just embrace it. It's just who you are. And I really need to change this. And the thing that really was the catalyst was I couldn't get up the stairs without getting out of breath. I was going to the doctor more regularly because of aches and pains and different kinds of symptoms. And I knew that it was more than just the aesthetic of it and being comfortable with the aesthetic of being whatever size I was comfortable in. I was having health issues.
What kind of issues were you having, Nina?
The aches and pains and all that kind of stuff, they were saying fibromyalgia might be the thing, or I had fatty liver. I had, again, just trouble getting up and down the stairs. My asthma was worse and just mood stuff, obviously, which, you know, so I knew I needed to change, but I just didn't want to do the same thing again. And I knew there had to be a different way. And I remembered, because the other piece of this is that I grew up in a family where diet and exercise was how my sisters and my mom and I connected. So it had a lot of strong roots for me in this is what it means to be a woman. But my sister, at one point with her struggles, took me to a meeting with this woman named Jeannie in the Valley in California. And Jeannie was talking about emotional eating and how we eat to take care of feelings that we don't want to feel or things that are, you know, are stuck in us that we don't know how to face. And that was the first time I ever heard that. And of course, you know, I was like, that was a fun meeting. That's cool. But I still need that thigh gap. So I'm going to go back and get on another diet and do this whole thing over again, you know, because it was in my 20s. And so I remembered that in that moment. And I was like, you know, that's one thing I haven't really looked into. That's one thing I haven't tried. And I was just so like, oh my gosh, I remember just waiting for my family to leave so I could be alone with the pantry and, you know, binge without shame. And then, of course, I felt it anyway, you know.
Did you have any issues with bulimia?
No, that wasn't, binge eating and emotional eating.
I would have been in the pantry and then finding my way to the bathroom when nobody was home.
Yeah,
and purging.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I just sat down with myself and I just started journaling and noticing, like watching myself. Now, I do have a background in mindfulness and meditation. I spent years, a few summers living in a Buddhist temple. And so I'm very familiar with this. And I'm a lifelong meditator. And I was like, well, I think I can bring awareness to what I'm doing. Just observe myself. And so I started just taking notes and observing, what am I feeling? What am I eating? And how do I feel after? Right. And I started noticing I was feeling stressed. And I ate, I don't know, a bag of Cheetos, and I was still stressed. And now I felt guilty for eating the bag of Cheetos on top of the stress. So it wasn't taking care of the feeling. And so I started working on different ways to handle the emotion that I was feeling that was not food related. And then the interesting thing happened where I started sharing this idea of coming up with what I call a menu of choices of things to do with the feelings that are coming up that's not food related. And I was in a workout group, of course, on Facebook. And so I posted that this woman's like, I just can't stop eating. And I said, well, have you tried this? And then she did. And then it helped her. And I was like, And you know, Gloria Steinem said that the final stage of healing is helping others, right? And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go on this journey myself, but I'm also going to bring other people along with me, right? So I went on that journey and I found a workout that I really like to do. And I started just looking at my relationship to food and what it was supposed to be like and what it's like in other cultures and how people who are fit and healthy, how do they relate to food when they don't have an addiction? And so I started practicing those things. And we can get into neuroplasticity and all that in a minute. But as I practiced these things over and over again, they became more natural. So I started doing just eating in a way where I was respecting my food, enjoying my food. You know, I do something called permission practice where, you know, if you want a piece of cherry pie, eat the piece of cherry pie, and then you won't feel like you need to eat the whole pie. It's that feeling of, I can't have this. I shouldn't be doing this that makes you binge, right? It's one of the things. And so, you know, that permission practice, put it on a plate, sit down, enjoy it, be present with it, really like just put all of your senses in it, mindful eating of it. And then my favorite thing to say is I can have more of that later because that's true. And I'm going to get up and do something else. And those were the three steps to it. That's was making great. Sure there was something to do after.
Can you repeat those three steps again?
Oh, sure. First step is give yourself permission to eat it, put it on a plate, sit down and enjoy it. Tell yourself, I can have more of this later because that's true. And then go do something else. That's like a pre-plan thing. You have to know what you're going to do after you're done with the pie or whatever it is. But you have this like step-by-step thing where then you get up and you put your plate in the sink and you do something else. And that creates that habit loop, right?
Yeah.
So habit loop is your trigger, your action, and your reward. So creating these habits, these habit loops to put the dish in the sink and go do whatever else I was going to do after that with, you know, after eating that yummy pie. So anyway, there's a lot more I could get into about all of these details. I'm trying to keep it narrowed down.
So can I ask, how much did you lose? How much weight did you lose?
87 pounds. Yeah.
And you did it by doing
this emotionally, like handling the reasons why I was going to food to solve problems that food was never meant to fix. What did that, remember I mentioned this to you. It was Peter Crone is a wonderful public figure, mental health guy. And he said, addictions are the use of something that almost works to make you feel better.
I love that. That's so true.
It almost works.
It almost works.
Because in the moment, you're getting a dopamine hit. Dopamine is like a Band-Aid thing, you know?
Well, it's just like cigarettes are dopamine hits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's about how can I get myself that dopamine without food? And how can I also lower the dopamine response that I'm getting from the food? That's the reason why I do, you know, still limit, although I do give permission. Because again, anything that we say I can't have, I'm going to want the whole bag, right? But I do limit things that are more like just super, super strong flavored foods, like Snickers bars or Doritos or stuff like that. Those are like the heroin of food because they create such a strong dopamine response. Yes, and after the first chip or after the first bite, it's not there anymore. So you have to keep eating it, keep eating it, keep eating it to get a stronger hit, right? It's just like a drug. It's just crazy how it works in the brain.
Just think of all the money that these big companies put towards creating flavors or that sensation in the mouth, the crunch that keeps you munching and chewing on the stuff. And you're like, holy crap, I hit a whole bag.
Exactly.
Of Doritos. Exactly. Doritos really are addictive. They're like scary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They truly are. You know, it's interesting because for me, when I look back at, you know, my struggle around my relationship with food, you know, it's so funny. I went through life and I thought I was really fine. And then in my teens, I think I was around 16. And I just looked in the mirror one day and I guess self-esteem, it was a layering of things. It always is. And I was like, wow, I look fat. I look at those photos today. There's nothing wrong.
Not at all. I know, me too.
And I started to lose weight and I dropped like 20 pounds or even more. It's like 95 pounds. It became this weird spiral. I just couldn't see. I associated, you know, my self-esteem and everything with how I looked.
Sure.
And it was so distorted. And it probably did such a number on my brain chemistry. And then I realized, I discovered when I was in my first year of college, there was a guy that I really liked and had a super crush on. And he said that he was leaving school and he no longer wanted to continue art school. And I thought about this a few years ago and I felt really depressed. And that was the first time I binged and purged.
Oh, yeah.
So this very vicious cycle, it was such a secret. It was such a painful secret. And then in my later 20s, I just, you know, I got help. I went for therapy. But I always remember, and I've said this on the podcast, started working with a therapist. I was seeing her twice a week. I'm very thankful that I got into therapy. So thankful. And I had a really good therapist. And she said, the next time you want to binge and purge, before you do anything, I want you to sit with what you feel. And I was like,
yikes.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I said that to her. I was like, what do you mean? And she said, well, that's what you and I get to explore. I didn't know what it meant to sit. I didn't know how to sit. And it was extraordinary because that started to be able to sit with my feelings, that my feelings were valid, that if I sat with what I felt, I could start feeling nourished spiritually. So it was a journey, but that was a really pivotal moment. I've always remembered that. And then doing therapy and group therapy and having really good functional docs and but just learning how to create a healthy relationship. And I had a sister of mine say to me, so you're not purging now. So since now you know this is the problem, you know, you'll be able to work this out. I'm like, I have to establish a new relationship with food. I don't even know what that means.
It's not about the food.
No, it's not.
Just like it's not about the heroin and it's not about the alcohol. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's not about anything that we get addicted to. It's the thing that we are distracting ourselves from, the things that we either consciously or our nervous system is telling us we are not capable of handling.
Right.
Right.
We can't cope. So this is our coping mechanism.
Yeah. It's the thing that almost works. It's interesting too, because when you said, you know, she told you to sit with your feelings, that would just incite terror in the hearts of all the, you know, like, oh my gosh, what do you mean? I have to sit with my, you know, because for a lot of people, it's like, but that's, I can't handle that. If I feel what I'm feeling, I'm going to get overwhelmed. I'll never come back. What if I cry? What if I this? Yeah. And then that's when we get into all the stories and beliefs. We get into, who told you that it's not okay to cry? Is that really true? Do we want to unplug that program and maybe allow ourselves to cry? Who told you that feelings get stuck and that you never get out of them again? When did it happen where it felt so big and overwhelming and nobody was there for you? You're there for you now. You can handle this. And we build that capacity to be with these feelings slowly and over time. And sometimes it goes really quick, actually. I said over time, but it just depends. But being able to sit with and be with those feelings and then tell your nervous system, your from your higher self place, from that which is watching you do these things. From
You need to explain. I know, but you may want to unpack that a bit for people.
We are not our thoughts and we're not our actions. We are the awareness that is watching ourselves do these things. So as soon as we can realize that we are driving this wonderful machine, right? that we get to change our thoughts. We get to change our behaviors. And as soon as you change your beliefs and your thoughts and what you're doing, you can become a whole different person. But understanding that our thoughts are not us can take a little practice, but I do have practices that people can do that help them realize that they are awareness.
I think this is a good point to kind of sit with and talk about. Our thoughts are not who we are. Our thoughts are what we've created in our mind that we think is our person. I mean, this is who we are in the world, you know?
Right.
I mean, I know it sounds really simple, but I look at, when I think of my higher self, and this is, you know, just bringing in the spiritual essence of who we are.
Yeah.
It's almost to me, and it's, you probably, you know, Michael Singer had written Untethered Soul.
Oh, yeah.
It's really helped a lot of clients with addiction.
Yeah.
And what he talks about in the book is that if you take a moment, imagine within you, I don't know if he says it, but this is how I see it. There is someone within me observing life. And I almost see this as a person sitting in a chair, observing the world through my eyes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So when you're about to go even for a drink, or if you're like, oh God, you know, I'm going to drink, eat that quart of ice cream or whatever, take a moment and observe what's going on.
Right, right, right. And that's the thing. So observing yourself is the first step in being able to change what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Because what we do rotely, just over and over and over again out of habit, those are just neural connections. And my favorite analogy for how neural connections work is a sledding track in the snow.
Right.
So if you go down this sledding track over and over again, you make a rut. And so it, all you have to do is place your sled at the top of the hill and whoop, there it goes right down to the tree, right? So let's say I'm sad and I eat a brownie. I'm sad and I eat a brownie. If I do that over and over and over again, then the brain doesn't have any other choice because it doesn't know, you haven't told it there is one, to just, when you have the feeling, you go get the brownie. But when we come up with that menu of choices of other things that actually take care of the sadness, then we can catch it through awareness practices, which I can actually give everybody one that's really easy before we go. But if we can have that moment of awareness, you know, Buddhist teachers always say that's your moment of choice, right? If you can make that little pause, that creating that pause, right? And creating that pause, then you can make that new choice. And then it's sad, call a friend, sad, call a friend, sad, call a friend. You do that over and over again. And then you make a new rut. It becomes very easy for the sled to go down that hill. And synaptic pruning happens, which will actually fill in, if you will, the other track. It prunes those connections because it doesn't need to hold on to all of them. Our brains are always pruning connections, right? Mm-hmm. And what it holds on to is the things that we repeat. So that is the work part of it. Biggest part of it is turning the sled.
Here's a perfect example. People will say, well, I can't do that because I always do this.
Oh my goodness. If always and never are in your vocabulary, then that's a belief. And beliefs are optional.
And I'm like, no, today's a new day.
Yeah.
And you can choose to do things differently.
Examining those beliefs and those programs, if you're ever saying always and never, like here's one of my favorite, another, I'm all full of analogies today. Another one that's great is there's a curb, right? And it's a high curb and there's three people and they each fall off the curb, right? They trip and they stumble off the curb. The first person goes, gosh, damn it. Who put that curb there? I hate that, blah, blah, blah. And they go off and they're mean to everybody all day long. And they're just, you know, whatever. The other person falls off the curb and goes, oh, this always happens to me. Of course I fell off the curb. I just have the worst luck. And then someone else falls off the curb and they go, hey, that's a 10. I did it. Woo. You know, and they make a joke about it and they have a good time, right? It's the reason why they're responding that way is their lenses of life, which are formed by our beliefs. Yeah. Our beliefs are given to us either by the society we live in, the parents that we were raised with, you know, all these different kinds of things. Because when we have an incident in our lives, humans are meaning-making machines. And so something happens to us and we go, well, that must mean that I'm a bad person. I don't deserve happiness. All men are like this. The world isn't safe. All these things. It's always like this. I never get. And we come up with these beliefs, right? But the thing is, those aren't true with a capital T. The only things that are really true with a capital T is the sky is blue and water is wet. If it's not one of those things, it's changeable.
Yeah.
So we make a list of all of our beliefs that are limiting us and holding us back. And then we make a list of what's true about all of those things. And then we rip up, shred, whatever, set on fire safely, the other list. And this is our new way. This is our new programming we're putting in our brain.
Right.
Our brain is for us as awareness to program. And I know that might, people need to take a minute on that, but it's absolutely true. Our brains are for us to program. The other part of our system is our nervous system. And our nervous system stores past experiences as nervous system responses, fight, flight, freeze, fawn, right? Those responses, they can get stuck if we don't get a chance to process them, which is the other thing that I do with people is embodied processing, which is a form of somatic processing that does not re-traumatize by talking about the incidences. It's pretty cool. Anyway, I'll get into that later. But if our nervous system is sending messages that we're in danger in some way, or there's something that we need to get distracted from, then our brain is going to go, oh, okay, I will make her look at this, or I'll have her do this thing to distract her. I'll have her go get a piece of pie instead of handling whatever this terrifying thing is that she's feeling right now, right? Which could be an email.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be, or like the phone call you don't want to make, right? It's not a tiger chasing us, right? And so our job is to comfort the nervous system. Allow those feelings to be there. Say, I see you. Give them some compassionate attention. It makes sense that you feel like that right now. And then tell our brains what we are going to actually do instead of the old thing that we used to do. And so all of these things working together just creates such a peaceful, healthy, physically and mentally way to live. And then we don't find ourselves just being pulled around by our thoughts that are based on our nervous system reactions and our past, these files that we have and these beliefs and things like that, that we can change.
So when you started this journey a few years ago and you lost this weight, was it difficult for you to make healthy food choices?
I needed to figure out what that meant because healthy food is kind of like you with the feelings. Like, what is that? You know, I have no idea, you know, because it's either a shake or it's like, you know, some freeze dried thing from Nutrisystem. Like, what am I eating? I don't know. And so, what I did was I started doing intuitive eating. Like, what does my body want to eat right now? And where is that coming from? Is that coming from an emotional need? Like, I want sugar because I'm feeling lonely and sad, or I want crunchy, salty food because I want control. By the way, there's an interesting correlation between certain emotions and certain flavors. But I had to go, oh, wait, what does my body want right now? And just reestablishing that connection and relationship with my body as like a companion, like instead of something, an adversary or something that I just was disconnected from. And so I started doing more intuitive eating. Like, what does my body really want right now? And I found myself just naturally wanting more greens and more proteins and, you know, more fruits and things like that. And once you've been off of like hard sugar for a while, it's amazing how sweet fruit is. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, it's so sweet. But again, that dopamine response has to settle down, right? And it's not, I mean, I'm still, you know, I'm comfortable right now. When I first was working out and stuff like that, I got like super fit because I'd never done it before and it was fun. Mm-hmm. But it's also a full-time job, so I'm not into that. But now, you know, I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll eat a brownie or I'll eat a piece of pie. It just doesn't have the power over me anymore, you know? And that's really the ticket. So as I eat all the healthy stuff and, you know, make sure that I'm mostly full of that. And then if I want to have something, I'm going to give myself permission to have it. You know, you go out with friends for cheesecake. You can't be like not eating cheesecake, you know? So that's how I changed it. And then one other thing I wanted to talk about. Food is nourishment for our bodies, but it's also a mental break during the day. And people don't treat it that way. And I think this, every time I mention this to someone, they go, whoa, I never thought of it that way. But when you sit down to have breakfast before you leave the house, it's a moment of transition between what you were doing and what you're about to do. And it's a time to recenter yourself, get into your body, get into your nervous system, get into your mind and your spirit, check in with yourself. Enjoy your meal and treat it like it is. It's a transition moment. So we're saying, I did what I did this morning, that is done. And now I'm getting ready to do the next thing. We don't have our mind there yet. We're focused in our meal and our time with ourselves. And then we get up and go do what we were going to do next. Snacks, lunch, all of these things are moments for us to reconnect with ourselves, congratulate ourselves for accomplishing what we did during our busy day so far, breathe and look out the window for a minute.
Well, you know, it's interesting because how do we connect with ourselves? by being in a parasympathetic response.
Right.
So when we're in parasympathetic yep. mode, that's the state you want to be in when you digest your food. Mm-hmm. There's a sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight, and the parasympathetic nervous system, which is our rest, recovery, and digestion.
Yeah.
And when we're eating under a lot of stress, you know, you might be on the phone with somebody, you know, you've got to meet a deadline and you want to eat your lunch and your stomach is in a twist. It's equivalent to you trying to wash your clothes in the dryer. Your body gets very confused. It can't. Yeah, that's the analogy.
I like that.
Yeah, it's like, what? So people get heartburn. It's not that your stomach's producing too much acid. It's not producing enough in the valve. There's a little LES valve between the esophagus and stomach, and it's like it doesn't right. know what to do, and it stays open. And mm-hmm. it's, so it just screws up your digestion. But we are meant to sit down and have our food. We're meant to sit down with people too.
Yes.
You know, there's something about, you know, I have like some really good memories sitting down with my family, right. but it's a time for people to connect. Mm-hmm. And again, mm-hmm. it's a time to just that you get to relax.
And we just don't when things outside of our control, you know, in the country or in our town or in the family or, mm-hmm. you know, there's stuff that we can't control. And so we really need to learn how to bring ourselves into that stable center of ourselves so that we can recover and rejuvenate. We need to be able to just take those nervous system regulating breaths and learn how to I want to go on a breathing tour of the United States, side note, just teach people how to breathe. If people just could take like a long exhale breath before they said or did anything, the world would be a different place. Regulate, you know?
But the breath is, I mean, regulating the breath, I've said this and it's worth repeating. The most intimate relationship is with your breath. It's the first thing mm-hmm. you take in. It's the last thing you release before you leave your body.
That's right. Yeah.
You know this, and I want you to discuss this just by simple breathing, just a simple inhalation, exhalation, maybe mm-hmm. a cycle of 5 or 10, mm-hmm. you'll put yourself in a parasympathetic response.
Mm-hmm. Heck, even three. I mean, even three of them yeah. can do it, you know? So we put our hands on our body and we give it a little pressure so it feels held. And we breathe in and just breathe out through your mouth longer than you breathe in. We don't need to count. We
so
don't need
breathe
to box
through
breathe.
The nose.
We don't need to do anything else. Yeah. And we don't need to do all the fancy schmancy, you know, whatever. Yeah. That's great. I'm actually trained in pranayama, but like, yeah. that's not what we don't need to go there. So we just hold on here and sigh on the way out and drop our shoulders. And then eat. Yeah. And then decide what you're going to do next. And that, because it turns our thinking brain back on. When we're in fight, flight, freeze in the sympathetic state, everything's in our lower brain. It's in the fight, flight, freeze, you know, the amygdala, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So we need to turn on our thinking brain by regulating our nervous system. And then we can make choices.
Well, you know, what's interesting too with that breath work and
yeah.
that sigh actually helps to release the nervous system.
Yep. Making a noise with it is
making
so much
a
more
noise.
Effective. Yeah. And I know we can't do this if we're out at a restaurant, we're in an argument with somebody. I get that. But just breathe. But, and you also can't be like, oh, you know, but there's ways to do it. Yeah.
Well, I think sometimes our body does that naturally.
It does it naturally. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right? Like, right. After you've been stressed out about something,
yeah.
it's equivalent to, and this is the thing about how stuff gets stuck in the nervous system, is that as a culture, we do not allow the survival loop that begins when something difficult happens to us to complete. We have something happen to us and we instantly rationalize. We push down our feelings about it. We don't want to shake. Yeah. We don't want to cry. We don't want to yell because those things are culturally not okay. Right. And so people who do that, I was reading studies and the difference between people who had trauma, which is the stuck nervous system response, right? Not the event. So they had a big nasty event happen. And that event, some people did not have trauma stuck in them. They didn't have triggers and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. And those were the people who got to process it at the time, in the moment, with a person who could hold that space for them.
Right.
And then it didn't get stuck anymore. So what we need to do, we can still do it now. It's not like it's over just because it didn't happen then.
No.
We can still hold space for the sensations of the feelings in the body. Allow them to be there, welcome them, and let them process. And sometimes there's crying in the sessions, and sometimes there's, yeah, I want to yell something. But most of the time, it's just breathing and allowing that sensation to be there. See, the difference with what the way that I do somatic processing is that we don't talk about what happened. That's not important, really. I mean, it is. All experiences are valid. I don't mean it that way to discount it. But what's happening is there's sensations that are stuck when you have a feeling in your nervous system that it's trying to get your attention so it can resolve. And so we sit with the sensations. Like everyone knows, like the feeling of dread feels like a metal heavy ball in your gut, right? Mm-hmm. So we sit with that heavy metal ball and we breathe with it and we allow it and we just observe the heavy metal ball. No stories, just the qualities of the sensation. And what happens is we build our capacity to be with these uncomfortable sensations in the body. Then it makes it easier when they come up to go, oh, hi there, old metal ball, how you doing? And then we can start telling it, actually, you're safe and this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, you're safe. This is safe. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. a lot of times what happens with people, and I was there too. It's like, oh, this happened to me, so this is the way I am. No, yeah. It's just that you're stuck in a cycle. We're still holding on to the emotion.
And it's so important that they don't think they're holding on to it because they would love to get rid of it. It's in the nervous system. Mm-hmm. They're not, it's like they also can blame themselves and be like, I just can't let this go. Well, it's not you. It's your nervous system hasn't gotten a chance to complete that survival mechanism.
I think it's both.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the story. I think sometimes
that's true.
We get attached to stories.
That's true.
And this happened to me, so therefore, this is the way I view food.
Right.
No, it's kind of like, no, your father left the house to get milk and never came back.
Right. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Right. And this is why your relationship. No, your dad left.
Right.
This had incredible impact. How do you want to change that?
Right.
You know, the beauty of, and I can say this, did a lot of work on trauma and did a lot of work around eating. And I feel very blessed. I think the gift that I've learned over the years, whatever we didn't get growing up, we have the opportunity that I call free will to make the choice to say, what do I need now? What can I give myself? Or I want to give myself something. I don't know how to go about it. I mm-hmm. want to work with a coach or a therapist. Mm-hmm. I need someone to witness what I'm experiencing so I can change that story and let it go. And that's why I think therapy and coaching, it's we want somebody to bear witness to our experience so mm-hmm. we can release it and it feels valid.
Yeah, absolutely. And also processing, like, you get to be mad about what happened. You get to be upset about it. You get to express that. And absolutely. There was one person I was helping with binging, and we discovered that the reason why she binged was so that she could be mad at herself because she was never allowed to be mad at her father. Hmm. So, yeah. And it is, it's this threefold thing, your nervous system, your brain, and your higher self, and how to harmonize these things so that you're not reaching for things that the stuff that doesn't fix your stuff.
Well, I do find what's interesting this year, particularly, there are a lot of people that have really decided not to drink.
I know.
I'm seeing more and more. And actually, I think it was in the New York Times just a few days ago that liquor sales have really dropped mm-hmm. in the past year or so. Mm-hmm. And I feel that people, I mean, we're seeing, you know, the reports are coming out, alcohol is pretty toxic.
Right. Even in small amounts.
Yeah, in small amounts. I mean, mm-hmm. like, who doesn't like a glass of wine and a good buzz? I can't. I mean, as I get older, it's just not worth it. I don't sleep.
Yeah.
And I don't feel well. But a lot of people, I was talking to a brother of mine, and he's not a big drinker at all. He said, we don't have alcohol in the house. He said, maybe I'll have one if I go out for dinner. I'll have a beer or something. Mm-hmm. But he said, I like to feel present. I like feeling good.
And it takes a minute to need to be able to be comfortable being present.
Well, here's what's interesting mm-hmm. with alcohol is like when you don't drink, you actually feel good.
It's a depressant. Oh,
it is a depressant. And it also contributes to anxiety.
Absolutely. So do you know how it works in the brain? So we were talking about dopamine. You know, GABA mm-hmm. is like dopamine on steroids, right? Yeah. So what alcohol does is it accelerates GABA production. Mm. So you feel really, really good when you're on it, but you crash really, really hard when you're not. And that's the depressive agent in it. And so that's why the next day, not only do you have a hangover and you're foggy or whatever, but even if you've only had a glass of wine, you're probably not in as good of a mood as you would have been if you had not had that glass of wine. So again, not judging anyone, if anyone has having a glass of wine, but we're just informing people. Yeah, we're just informing people of what it actually does to the brain.
But I think what's happened is I look at COVID was a time that everybody really self-medicated. It was food. It was
some of us did. I actually went on a whole heal myself journey, and a lot of people did that too.
Yeah, but a lot of people did different things. And I think it's been a few years, but people were looking at their lives going, I really want to feel good. I want to be present. I think this generation, God bless them, they're not drinking as much.
No, I mean, they've gone to other things, but even that's healthier, just statistically.
I think it's interesting because to make that choice, it's because people are stopping and pausing.
Yes.
And reassessing.
Yes.
And in a way that they haven't before, it's like, I don't know if I want to do this.
And it's a cultural shift.
It's a big cultural shift.
Right. And that's what it takes too, a lot of the time, is the cultural shift. And so if we can culturally also shift away from diet culture.
Oh God, can we talk about that for a little?
Right. I mean, if we can just shift away. Do you know how many industries would go under if we were just happy with how we looked?
Well, the pharmaceutical industry
would all just go to face, creams, things, makeup, all of it. I mean, if you think about it, how much we put into our appearance and how much struggle and suffering.
I'm just going to touch upon it because other people do it much better than I do. The Ozempic, the downside, I mean, people are using Ozempic because they want to lose weight. It kills your appetite. Mm-hmm. It screws around with your digestion and peristalsis because it slows down digestion. Mm-hmm. And you're losing a lot of lean mass. You're losing muscle and you're losing fat. And if you go off it, you gain it right back. But it also contributes to thyroid cancer and other health issues in the body. It's not sustainable, and pharmaceutical companies just love it. So the question that I have is how do we teach people to have a different relationship with food? Because 50% of the country is overweight and obese.
I know, right?
And we've got it. I could go down a rabbit hole with this, but I feel that part of it is how can people start having a healthier relationship with healthy food?
Yeah. Well, I think also we're looking at societal, socioeconomic issues, what's available to people, and also are they medicating? If we're living in a place where we maybe can't, afford healthy food anyway, where we're already stressed and struggling with so many other things, then we are just going to get McDonald's because that's what's available to us,
And I'm going to look at the reality when I'm in the supermarket, I would say 75% of people, 80% that what sits in their cart, 70% of it is processed food.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. It's convenience. We're a stressed out, fat,
it's addictive.
Rush society. And but also culturally, we're set up for rushing, to make a home cooked meal. Even if you want to, eat healthier and all that, the struggle is when do I have time to make a home cooked meal? And so it's our culture too.
Yeah. And I know you're a mom. I've said to people, if you're sick, we are right now that 50% of adults to 60% have one chronic illness. Mm-hmm. 40% have two or more.
So many side tangents we could go on. But I think that there's the cultural part of it, the societal part of it, just like you brought up about how people have stopped drinking. We create a societal thing of it's more normal to eat healthier foods. It's more normal to not go to food for using it as a drug. It's more, whatever we normalize is what's going to pick up, right? And so I do see a lot more people who are very much into the somatic healing stuff that I do has been, it's very, very much such an effective treatment that so many people are like 2 years ago, they're like, what is somatic? What does that even mean? And now everyone's like, oh yeah, you're somatic. Oh, I want to work with you. That'd be great. And then, I think that we have to, in order to change how we how we view healthy food, we have to make our own story up about it. It's individual. There is no blanket thing, because that's what diet culture does, right? Think about it this way, or like the gurus, the diet gurus you can sign up with or whatever, they try to get you into this, their own culture they've created about how to think about food. And the reason why it doesn't stick is because it's not ours. So individual, I believe, is where this needs to be, is how do you want, like I'll give suggestions like I just did about food as a break and all these kinds of things, but the person has to really own their relationship with food again, because it's so personal. It's such a personal experience.
As you know, part of what I do with people, I mean, it's a big part. As I've said before, I'm working on a book on gut health. Yeah. It'll be out in the next couple of months.
So excited about that.
What is so astonishing about what allows us to heal, that people can heal their gut in a matter of months, literally. Mm-hmm. By just changing their diet, and I'll go into mm-hmm. it in the book, just changing the way you're eating.
Yeah.
You know, yep. Fermented foods or probiotics.
Yep. Absolutely.
Just these, I mean, these are simple changes. Certain foods help to heal the gut.
But here's the thing. All of those things are great, and I can't wait to get your book. Side note, please hold a copy for me. But also, it's the story. It's the belief around eating healthy food. Like, how many times have you told someone protein, probiotics, you know, eat your greens? You know?
Yes. But I guess this is great. I love that we're having this conversation. People that see me have been to 5 to 6 to 7 different doctors.
Right.
And they're looking for answers. And I say to them, I can help you. Mm-hmm. We're going to always start with your gut.
Yep.
Because the gut and brain, you know, the gut, the brain is your second gut. Or, oh my God.
You said it backwards. The gut is your second brain.
The gut is your second brain. Yeah. And there is an incredible gut-brain axis. So if you're eating right, if you're eating and you're experiencing gas and bloat, and you've been diagnosed with autoimmune issues like rheumatoid arthritis, or you have psoriasis, and then you might notice, I'm having anxiety. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling depressed.
Right.
It starts in the gut, because 95% of your neurotransmitters are created in the gut. So you start healing the gut. And guess what happens? Your thinking starts to change. And then people, what happens when people start seeing that they're feeling better? Mm-hmm. I feel it's easier for them to make better choices.
Yeah. And to stick with it. But the other thing too, is that the sticking with it, that's what I meant by the brain part, is that we need to come up with our own story about why we're doing it. What is your why? And reminding yourself of why you're choosing this thing, and making it beautiful, making it fun, making it delicious, making it the experiences that you want food to be, handling the emotional part with something else, and making this food experience a calm for your digestion and your gut health and everything. It's all, like you said, it's so funny. You're like from the gut to the nervous system, and I'm nervous system to the gut. But it, yes, it's inextricably linked, and coming up with a different way of going. Like, you know, you don't want anyone being like, well, Meg said, if I want to feel better, I need, like, no, I am choosing to take care of myself. Meg is my best guide on this. And I'm going to heal my relationship with food with Meg's help, support, guidance, and advice, because she's the best at what she does. But I am the one who's owning the choice. It's not being put upon me.
Well, here's another way I say to people when they're feeling like, you know, there's a honeymoon phase when you start working with people. And then it's like, oh my God, you have me on 50,000 pills. I don't have you on 50,000 pills. I'm cooking all day. No, you're not.
Right, right.
So, you know, you're just aware of the fact. You're aware that you're actually in the kitchen and you've never done this before. So I say to people, but you came to see me because you had incredible fatigue.
Yes.
You had terrible anxiety.
Yes.
You started showing thyroid antibodies. I'm going to throw. And you were having terrible hot flashes and difficulty losing weight. What's happening? Your symptoms are going away. Now you're able to work out. Mm-hmm. You're able to go on trips. Your joints don't hurt. Think of all the wins. So if you look at, if I eat this way, the quality of my life changes. Mm-hmm. But there's so many things attached and associated with food. And I, let me tell you, I was a mess. Yeah. And it took a while over the years to feel totally comfortable in my skin.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I'm so glad you did that.
And I know, I'm like, if I can do it, it doesn't matter if you weigh 210 pounds or if you, I was mm-hmm. a skinny little fucking twig. Mm-hmm. What is going on in my relationship with food?
Right.
And as Deborah Brenner said to me, I want you to sit with what you feel. And that statement right. just opened doors to my healing.
That's right. Yeah. And having that, like, I am worth seeing Meg. I am worth taking care of my body. I used to call it a case of the fuck it's. Yeah. Like, you're doing really good and you feel really good and your symptoms are gone and right, all that. Right. But that, like, old nervous system or that old story of like, yeah, whatever, right. it doesn't work anyway. It's never going to stick. I can't trust myself to stick with this and whatever else is going on in there. You know, there's a million little voices, yeah. right? Yeah. But the remedy for self-sabotage, you know, is being with those old stories and changing those old stories. You have to approach it holistically. You have to handle your body and your mind and your spirit all at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's, I love that that's becoming so much more mainstream too, to include that part of it where it doesn't matter. It's not religious. It's just no. connection to yourself and realizing that you are awareness that is watching yourself do things and sitting in that seat of higher self is actually part of corporate training now, like corporate coaching for CEOs and stuff like that now.
Isn't that great?
So that's great, you know? Yeah.
Also, you have a day that you eat a cake or something. Just get back on, on track great. Next day. Same yeah, day.
Or even later that day.
Or later that like, day.
Yeah, depends. Just have something healthy after. Who cares?
Something
you know, that
healthy.
Moment is gone. Yeah.
Or, you know, it's dry January. We're coming to an end. And you're like, you had a drink somewhat. Really? So tomorrow, you don't.
Exactly. That's right. We can never, I mean, that's the thing. When we're turning that sled, you know, and making the new neural mm-hmm. connection, we are going to find ourselves at the bottom of the hill again. But then that comes into the not beating ourselves up yeah. and how, what is our self-talk, which gets back to the beliefs, blah, blah, here we go again. But having that like, oh yeah, you get to the bottom of the hill and you hit the tree and go, well, shit, how'd I get down here again? And you observe and yeah. you take notes and, oh, I was feeling this and this and this, and that's what made me do this thing again. Cool. Now we know that. So that's another thing to notice and have awareness about. When I'm feeling or thinking these things, I have to turn my sled and do these other things instead.
Or here's another analogy I use. Doctor, doctor, my head hurts. Well, stop banging it against the wall.
Right.
Nina, I want to thank you so much for joining me today in the Hormone Lifestyle Zone. I will include Nina's, all her contact information. And she's on Instagram and TikTok, and she's always got good posts. Mm-hmm. Any closing words, my love?
Just know that you are not broken. You're not broken. There is nothing that needs fixing. There's only self-compassion and understanding and knowing that you deserve a life of health and happiness and resilience and empowerment in all areas of your life, including food.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank everyone for hanging out with Nina and myself today. And if any of you would like to find out whether or not you can work with me, I do have some availability. You can reach me on my website, megrichichi.com. All my contact information is there. You can set up a discovery call and we can see if we're a good fit for one another. So I want to thank everyone today. This was the first episode of 2025. May this year be extraordinary for all of us. And thank you so much for hanging out with me and Nina on the Hormone Lifestyle Zone. Take good care.